This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home, so let's not waste any time. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
A teacher in Seattle at Van Asselt Elementary, she called the police after she was threatened by a student. The student said that he would beat her up. And that, of course, I think we'd all say that's a good response, calling 911, right? Someone threatens to beat you up at your school. Yes? Can we all agree?
I agree, yeah.
It seems, I'm just asking because I want to make sure we're on the same page, because I don't want to say anything controversial. If a kid says they're going to beat you up, you should probably call 911, because that, I mean, do you really want, like, have you seen some of these 16, 17, 18-year-old kids? Oh my God, they're insanely built. It's like, what are you doing? I thought all kids were fat. No, they're all ripped. They're all muscular. They'll beat you up. Oh, in this case, it was a kid who's in the fifth grade, 11 years old, maybe, and 4'11". No weapons. Probably don't call the cops in that case, right?
I wasn't there. I don't know. I've read the story. I heard the 911 call.
Let's listen to this teacher. She called 911. 27 years old.
I'm a teacher at Van Asselt Elementary. In my classroom, I had a student who is age 11 say that he didn't care if I was a woman, that he was going to beat the out of me.
Okay.
And he made an advance on me like he was planning to do that.
Did he have any weapons or anything?
No, he did not have a weapon.
Where is he now?
He is in our school office at the moment.
That doesn't sound all that serious.
How do you know?
Because an 11-year-old kid who is 4'11" is not going to beat up a 27-year-old woman, man,
I don't know how tall she is, how big she is, if she's able to defend herself.
Not happening. Not happening. You know what you can do with a kid that's 4'11"? Literally kick them. You kick them right in the face. And you wouldn't even, you would not even develop a sweat. And how easy it is to take down an 11-year-old kid who doesn't have a weapon. I'm just throwing that out there. Now, apparently, this is controversial because she's a white teacher and the kid is African-American. And so there are some staff members at this school that actually apparently released this 911 call, claiming that this has everything to do with racism.
Is there a reason why you don't feel safe there at the school? Or are you just leaving for the day?
I don't feel safe at the school.
Okay.
Are there not any other adults around? I mean, you've got even the kid who's in the office at that point, not in your classroom. I feel like there's a little bit of overreacting. Just a little bit.
Why is that kid still there in the office? That's immediate suspension. No questions asked. Get him out of there.
Yeah, okay. And I 100% agree with that. You do have to make sure that a parent or guardian shows up to remove the kid. Yes, you can't just be like,
well, yeah.
Your system just push him right out of the. No, because then he'll just wait in the bush. And then as the teacher's coming out, then he'll jump her and kick her backside. You take care of things like this. This kid should 100% be suspended for this conduct. 100%. Was it necessary to call 911? I would say no.
Did he threaten to beat you up? Did he posture to hit you?
Not real. I mean, kind of. He kind of puffed his chest out and moved in towards me, but he didn't, like, hold up a fist or anything.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, how did she get away? So, people are calling her racist. I'm not ready to say that. I don't know if she's racist, only because I don't know if she would do the exact same thing if a white student would have done this. She certainly is playing into what the racist claims are playing into, right? I mean, there's clearly racial elements here. I don't think she's a racist. However, I'm going to do exactly what the left does in situations like this, okay? I'm going to believe them. I'm going to believe that she's racist just for the sake of this exercise. Doesn't that mean she should get fired? If the left's perspective on this is an example of racism. In fact, in the Seattle Times piece, where I first saw the story, they linked to a whole bunch of studies that are absolute truth, that if you are a black student in a Seattle school, you are at a disproportionately higher rate of likelihood of being suspended or expelled or punished in some way as a result of conduct. Now, they don't go into the dynamics of, well, are white kids also doing the same things that are leading to the black kids or Latino kids or Asian kids getting expelled or suspended? They don't get into that. They just look at the raw data. But the raw data is presented by the left, generally speaking, of this is an example of institutionalized racism. And I remember at the time, 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, when they were going through, yet again, their renegotiation, the teachers union of their contracts, they pointed to something that they wanted to change, which is this is disgusting because black students are getting disproportionately targeted for these expulsions and these suspensions, and we need to go after this institutionalized racism. Okay, you're responsible for it. If you believe that this was racist, then this teacher is racist and should be fired. And yet the left will never say that. They'll never go after specifically teachers. Why? Because the teachers belong to the unions. Leftists generally support teachers' unions, yes? They generally are backing them. They will fight for them. They will fight on their behalf. They will stand up for them each and every time. And yet, all of the evidence suggests that the people that they're supporting are the actual racists. If I'm to believe, the numbers are the way they are because of racism. So if they actually believe that this teacher is racist, why is she still teaching? Why does she get the protection of the teachers' union? Because clearly, she didn't violate any law in any of this. She clearly didn't do anything that's against any kind of rule. If you feel unsafe, you're supposed to call 911. Cops will tell you that all the time. But the left tells me this action is racist. Why is she not fired? Why do you not hear the protests coming from folks demanding, because Black Lives Matter, to get this woman outside of this school immediately? It's when you've got, and I love stories like this. The stories like this happen on the right pretty frequently as well. This whole idea of we have two beliefs, two ideological beliefs. And sometimes two ideological beliefs can be the polar opposite of each other. And they butt heads. And at some point, you have to pick a side. Now, when we're talking about a non-leftist versus leftist position of the bakery that doesn't want to make a cake for a gay couple, right? So you've got two issues here. You've got religious freedoms. And you've got LGBTQ rights, civil rights. Well, someone has to win in that, right? One side has to win. Well, now you've got it on the same exact side, where one side has to win. She's either a racist who should be kicked out of school immediately and never be allowed to teach again because we don't want racists in front of our kids. Or number two, the claims of racism are bogus, that it's not always racist. And maybe we run to that claim a little bit too quickly. So they have to pick a side. They can't both support her and call her a racist at the same time. It doesn't quite work out that way.
I'm sure you listened to the entire tape, right?
I did. And most of the rest of it was, it's like 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes long. The only other details in there are, what's your address? What does the kid look like? What is he wearing? That sort of stuff.
In your opinion, was there any racism involved at all?
I did not hear any racism whatsoever.
Likewise.
Which is why I don't generally, when I see something like this, oh, she's white. She's white. And the kid was, oh, okay, racism. Well, I mean, was it? But that's what the left says. They say that all the time. And they don't give the benefit of the doubt. If this were, for example, a Trump-supporting teacher, there's a big Trump teacher, would she get the benefit of the doubt at all? No, of course not. The automatic assumption is that she's a racist. So, okay, fine. I will go with you, leftists, on this and say that this teacher is racist. So now what? Now the ball's in your court. I have no control over this. You're the ones who are making the claims. You go over and over and over again, say, look at the data. Who's suspending the kids? Who's suspending the African-American kids or the Latino kids or the Asian kids? Who's suspending them? Who's calling the principal and saying, whoa, 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 whoa. This kid just did some disrupting the class. The teacher. So then the teacher's racist. Or is she not racist? Or is he not racist? You're saying the data explains racism. But you're unwilling to say the people who are responsible for the data are the ones who are responsible for the racism. It is one of those stories that makes no sense whatsoever. And yet they keep putting it out there like a talking point over and over and over again. And then, of course, they get the same data over and over and over again, and they refuse to change anything. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. None better. Tax resolution hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Did you know you can follow me on Instagram? Just fire up the Instagram app, search for the screen name Jason Rantz, JSONRANTZ. Give me a follow, go behind the scenes of the show. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies.
It's Friday, and you know what that means. It means I get to talk movies thanks to our wonderful sponsor in Alpine Specialty Cleaning over at alpineclean.com. Hobbs and Shaw is the big weekend release, and they live in that Fast and Furious universe. This time, the film focuses on, well, Luke Hobbs, played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Deckard Shaw, played by Jason Statham, as they fight a genetically modified or enhanced bad guy, played by Idris Elba, hell-bent on unleashing a bio-threat to weed out all of the weak human beings. But when Shaw's sister is injected with the virus, a virus that will ultimately kill her if they don't act, they decide to team up together, Hobbs and Shaw, to neutralize the threat.
You want to tell me just what we're dealing with here?
It's my sister, family, business.
When it's the fate of the world, it becomes my business.
This whole thing sounds really dodgy.
Look after your sister.
Listen, I'll handle it.
The only way we survive is working together like a team.
Let's do this.
Buckle up, fat boy.
On my three. One.
Woo! Hey, see the look on his face? You have no idea how long I've been waiting to do that.
So Hobbs and Shaw is the epitome of a mindless, big-budget summer movie, and it delivers everything that you expect from a movie like this, everything it's supposed to. The action sequences are choreographed beautifully. It delivers the perfect amount of humor. The extended cameos in the movie are a lot of fun. If you're going into this movie, you do, however, have to suspend a huge amount of disbelief. Almost everything. And I mean this literally. Almost everything that happens in this movie is absurdly improbable and completely unbelievable. And all you have to do is take a look at the bad guy in this, played by Elba. He is compelling, and I love him. He's one of my favorite actors, but he's basically a robot human that pretty much can't be stopped or hurt until he randomly can be stopped and hurt. But if you kind of live in the world and allow yourself to just suspend disbelief in the way that you would at a movie like Harry Potter, I suppose, you're going to have a lot of fun with this movie. It's the same with all the other Fast and Furious films. If you know what you're getting into and you like the mindlessness of it, you're going to absolutely love this. It is almost impossible to not absolutely love Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. He is so charming. Arguably, he's our best action hero star that's working right now. I love him. And the relationship and the chemistry between he and Jason Statham and these two characters in this movie, it's really worth going and watching. How it basically makes the movie work as well as it does. I think even if you suspend disbelief, you put lesser capable actors in these roles, people who don't necessarily have the charm of Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham, especially working together, this movie wouldn't work so well. But because they're both cast in it, it does work well. Hobbs and Shaw is out right now. It's PG-13. That's about right for this movie. It is absolutely fun. This is a blast of a film. It's a little over 2 hours. You will love every single moment of this, again, if you go in with the right expectations. So I do recommend Hobbs and Shaw. I think you should check it out. But hey, what movie are you going to see? Maybe you don't want to listen to me. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Tell me what movie you plan on seeing this weekend. Or maybe you're going to stay in and watch a film on Netflix. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
The Sounders today did what they could to make sure the tensions don't escalate between the club, the MLS, and a group of Sounders supporters sympathetic to the Antifa plight. That's me being at least generous in how I talk about this, because the truth of the matter is we've got a whole bunch of Sounders fans who are with Emerald City Supporters, ECS. It's an independent club of Sounders fans. They are mad that the MLS and the Sounders have a policy that do not allow them to bring in a flag with a symbol, Iron Front symbol, that has been co-opted by Antifa. The supporters are mad because they support Antifa. They believe we live in a world in which Antifa is necessary because there are literal Nazis, I'm told. In fact, I was called a literal Nazi yesterday on Twitter. Literal Nazis who are out there physically assaulting people, and threatening the safety and well-being of Seattleites, Washingtonians, and Americans. And they are necessary, Antifa, to fight back. Of course, that's not what's happening. Antifa is a violent group of thugs, of domestic terrorists, in my view, and I hope they get labeled as such, that go around physically assaulting people with whom they disagree with politically. These are people who need some sort of meaning to their life, and they've concocted a delusion in which they are freedom fighters going after literal Nazis. And they do that by acting like fascists themselves. Now, we told you on Wednesday that the announcement by the club to ECS to not bring that flag anymore was controversial, to say the least. And we now know that on Sunday at the home game, these ECS members, they say, are going to show up with shirts with the Iron Front logo on them. Now, at least as far as I can tell, the policy that's on the books for the MLS does not address clothing. So I don't know what the Sounders are going to do. I don't know what the MLS is going to do. But the MLS, in theory, if they think this is getting out of hand, they could step in and actually suspend these fans from coming back to CenturyLink for the remainder of the season. They could get rid of their season tickets. They can do a whole host of things. Will they do that? I don't know. That's why this weekend is so incredibly important to pay attention to. This is not a story about soccer. I hope people don't think this is a story about soccer. It is not. This is a story about romanticizing and normalizing Antifa violence. That's a problem. White nationalists that march and physically assault people, every single one of them, degenerate, disgusting scumbags who deserve to go to jail. Antifa members who go out there attacking people with whom they disagree. Because remember, they're not just going after quote-unquote white nationalists the way you and I might talk about them. They view all Republicans as white nationalists. They view gay, Asian, independent journalist Andy Ngo as a fascist. They beat him up. They sent him to the hospital. Those people, total scumbags. Those people should be punished and put in jail. And I'm not going to romanticize any movement that engages in that kind of violence. I don't like romanticizing or normalizing or even supporting some of the groups like Proud Boys that I think get dangerously close to crossing the line. I haven't seen them physically assault people, and I've gone to some of these events as a talk show host to kind of document and see what happens. They sometimes try to get someone to fight them. I've never seen them actually get violent. I've seen with my own eyes Antifa get violent. Now, some people will argue, well, Proud Boys, they're all Nazis. No, they're not. Again, you can call them alt-right members, I suppose. You could say the positions they hold are outside of the mainstream. Okay, say that. But I'm not going to pretend that everybody whom I disagree with is a Nazi. You know why? Because that's disrespectful to my people's history. My religion's history. And I'm not going to pretend that what happened in Nazi Germany is going on here in Seattle, if not, I suppose, for the ECS members who are strong supporters of Antifa doing their job. So we'll see what ends up happening. It is dangerous if the Seattle Sounders and the MLS, or any organization, decides to normalize violent thugs who beat people up on the basis of political opinion. We should be very, very concerned as a city if that's going to happen. I believe the Antifa movement is not popular. I believe it is a handful of very, very loud and very violent losers. But I do not think there are thousands or hundreds even of Antifa members. I think there might be hundreds of Antifa supporters. Remember, these people who are ECS members who are supportive of Antifa, who legitimately think that they're doing a good job in fighting fascists, they're taking time out of their day to go to a soccer match while they claim Nazis are roaming free, causing all sorts of problems. That kind of means they don't really believe the nonsense that they're pushing out there. They just want a virtue signal and they just want to go after their political opponents. And so kudos to the Sounders for standing up, because they said, you know what? We get your complaints about our warning to you. We're not backing down on the symbolism being co-opted by violent thugs, because that's not who we are. Sounders, an incredibly progressive organization. I was part of the radio broadcast team. I'm very well aware of the culture that they try to adhere to, and it is a very progressive one. But this is one step too far. And I'm glad they're standing up. So we'll see what ends up happening on Sunday. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. 1-800-465-8770. In fact, if you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to this very story so you can help me shine a spotlight on it. Back to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770, KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Senator Kamala Harris was hit pretty significantly at the debates over her, let's just call it, not-so-progressive record as Attorney General in California. Twitter, in fact, says she was destroyed, and no one lies on Twitter. To help us go through her record is John Phillips, my friend, a morning show host from KBC in Los Angeles. John, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So, take us through Kamala Harris's criminal justice record, because she went on and on and on about how strong it was. But of course, Tulsi Gabbard, the Democrat from Hawaii, took her on pretty tough.
Yeah, so I'm in agreement with Congresswoman Gabbard that Attorney General Harris was a complete train wreck, but she was a train wreck for all the opposite reasons. They're acting like she was this cop that was running around throwing everyone in jail and uber hard on crime, this James Q. Wilson disciple, and that's just not who she was. She was horrible because her priority was getting as many people out of jail as possible. There's a huge misnomer that as Attorney General of California, that she was actually this prosecutor, like going after gang members, going after murderers, and that's just not what that office does. They do prosecute cases when there's a conflict of interest in a county. So, say a police officer is charged with a crime, and the DA's office works with that particular department, and they say, "Oh, there's a conflict of interest here." Her office would come in and prosecute it, but primarily what she would do is she would do things like write the title and summary of various propositions that we would vote on.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two significant propositions that California voters voted on that dealt with law enforcement issues. One of them was Prop 47. One of them was 57. 47 essentially decriminalized pretty much petty crimes and drug crimes, and tied the hands of judges, tied the hands of prosecutors in dealing with low-level offenses. She tricked people into thinking that it was, you know, something that would provide treatment for drug offenders, and, you know, treatment, not jail. And people had no idea that they were voting to allow people to commit petty crimes without fear of going to prison. The second one was Prop 57, which took a lot of serious crimes that were felonies and turned them into misdemeanors. So something like raping an unconscious person or discharging a firearm on school grounds, violent elder abuse, things like that were reclassified from felonies to misdemeanors so that people wouldn't serve a lot of time in jail and would be eligible for early release. She called that something along the lines of, you know, the Safe Communities Act or you know, something like that. She was awful, but she was awful in this duplicitous way that tricked people who would otherwise want to keep violent people in prison into allowing them back on the streets. And because of that, crime in California is going back up.
Yeah. And we're dealing with a lot of the same things here in Washington State, certainly Western Washington, King County in particular, where Seattle is the biggest city. And, you know, the difference is we don't have politicians trying to trick people into voting into and institutionalizing these really bad policies. We just have a bunch of lawmakers and county prosecutors who just won't charge. And so it was that just like a strategic move by Kamala Harris to give herself some coverage?
When she ran originally for Attorney General, she was the prosecutor in San Francisco. She knew that San Francisco, even in the liberal state of California, is way to the left of the rest of the state, and she knew that was a liability. And she was running against a popular Republican district attorney, Steve Cooley, from Los Angeles, which, of course, is the biggest county in the state. And she had to position herself on the right. even though she wasn't a tough prosecutor, she had to position herself that way. So I think a certain amount of the flack that she's getting from Tulsi Gabbard and others is because of how she framed herself and how she framed her campaign in those races. She didn't deliver, but that's certainly how she portrayed herself in the press.
Just joining me, we're talking with John Phillips. He's a morning show host from KBC in Los Angeles, and we're talking about the record of Kamala Harris when she was the Attorney General of California. And John, it seems like Kamala's in a pretty difficult position as far as setting up the narrative, because on the one hand, she's on record back when she was Attorney General. There's literature to back this up. There are sound bites to back this up that she's hard on crime, but she can't exactly come out and say, oh, no, I wasn't hard on crime. I was actually light on crime. It feels like she can't really wiggle her way out of this.
Yeah, and the problem is going to be she was hard on crime for trivial things that no one cares about. So, like, truancy was a big initiative for her, a big deal for her. She would aggressively go after parents and children who were truant from school. And part of the reason that she focused on things like that is because she thought it would inoculate her from criticism, because she wouldn't do things like pursue the death penalty against cop killers. And people would go nuts. Dianne Feinstein, by the way,
Senator,
has a very low opinion of Kamala Harris because of things exactly like that. When she wouldn't pursue the death penalty against a cop killer in San Francisco, Feinstein went absolutely bonkers over it, and Kamala just didn't care. She refused to pursue death penalty cases the entire time she was a DA in San Francisco, regardless of how heinous the crime was.
So do you think that Senator Harris can sort of push the criticism aside? How exactly is she supposed to react when a Gabbard or anybody else, because I have to assume that, yes, it's easy to push aside Representative Gabbard because she's polling at 0%. But if it's Cory Booker, if it's Pete Buttigieg, if it's Joe Biden, it's a little bit different.
Well, the answer is, yeah, I put people in jail. I was a prosecutor and people broke the law and did bad things, and I'm proud of it. But for whatever reason, they've gone so far off the deep end in opposing law enforcement, opposing keeping people incarcerated who have committed crimes, she's got to rewrite history and she's got to pretend like she never did that. It used to be Democrats. I mean, you go back to Michael Dukakis and Willie Horton. You know, that was a huge liability for them if they were seen as being light on crime. For whatever reason, they, in unison, decided to go in the opposite direction, and I think that would be poison in a general election scenario.
Yeah. What do Californians think about her?
She won her election against Loretta Sanchez. We have a top two primary. So she faced off against another Democrat in the general. She won that. She barely beat Steve Cooley when she ran the first time for Attorney General of California, something that it's very difficult for Democrats to lose statewide races. She almost did. She's probably one of the more popular politicians in California. All of that being said, right now, we're now a one-party state.
Yeah.
No Republican is elected statewide. No one has a chance of being elected statewide anytime soon. So, you know, if she were to run for re-election in California, my guess is she would win and not have much of a problem doing that. That being said, the person that California Republicans are talking about running against her, if she doesn't get elected president and runs for re-election, is Richard Grenell, the ambassador to Germany. He is from California, actually lives in my neighborhood and picked my house in Palm Springs, a good friend. But he is someone that the CRP would heavily recruit, put a lot of chips on wooing him into that race, and that would be a fast.
Yeah, Ambassador Grenell, a tremendous ambassador who's trying to fight the criminalization of homosexuality globally. He is tied to the Trump administration, which I'm going to assume will be used against him. But he is on a lot of these issues on the right side, not just of history, but on the right side of public opinion.
Yeah, and his name is all over the news. Every time you turn on the television, they're saying something about him or opening up a newspaper. And, you know, California's the biggest state in the union. It costs a fortune to get people to know who you are. So if you're making news, you're making headlines, that's half the battle right there.
Exactly.
You know, he would have to get out of that primary first and foremost, and I think that he would have the juice to do that. Once you make it to the general, it's on you to make the case.
Well, I'm excited for that matchup, but first, of course, we have to defeat Kamala Harris, who's running for president. I've been talking with John Phillips, morning show host over at KBC in Los Angeles. John, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. Happy Friday, everybody. I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend ahead. I'm going to the Sounders game on Sunday. That should be fun. Don't mess up the hair. If you're going to attack me, just don't mess up the hair. That's the only request I make. Although now maybe that's going to mean they're going to go for only my hair.
Why don't you wear a hat? Maybe a mega hat.
Okay, first of all, I'm never wearing a hat on this beautiful hair. Ever. That's ridiculous. Now, you're a fill-in. You don't know how amazing my hair is because you're not really... Although this week you have made many mentions of how great my hair is. You don't realize that we don't cover it up. We don't cover it up. So you say, and if you say that again, you might lose your job. That's how serious we are about hair here.
Noted.
Thank you.
Apologies.
Let's talk a little bit about the alleged Capital One hacker, Paige Thompson, 33 years old from Beacon Hill in Seattle. We spent some time this week talking about what went into what she is alleged to have done. 106 million people having their information hacked, possibly with the intent of selling it. And we heard over and over and over again a roommate saying this.
She's not somebody that would do something like that maliciously. Mm-hmm. She's not somebody that would take the data and like try to sell it or something like
now,
that.
It's possible that this individual truly believes that. Maybe they've convinced themselves that their roommate is not the crazy potential person that they are. Apparently, this person has been writing on Twitter, Paige Thompson, some crazy stuff, including, by the way, a threat to shoot up a social media company in California. We don't know exactly which one, according to the prosecutors. They didn't put it out, but apparently she was open about threatening specifically to shoot up a social media company. Now, I feel like I would know if I lived with a person who ends up getting accused of a hack against 106 million people plus wanting to shoot up a company. Don't you feel like there would be some sign? I don't expect you to know that of your neighbor, right? I have no idea of any of my neighbors. If I lived next to a serial killer, I'd be like, oh, wow, I didn't really talk to that person anymore. I wouldn't have seen any warning signs. You're living with someone, you would see that warning sign, yeah?
I live with people, and it's kind of the same thing as an apartment. Like, I don't see him very often. I'm hardly ever home. I never see him.
Do you not interact at all?
Yeah, I mean, when I see him.
Okay.
I hardly ever see
him. Now, when you see your roommate... Like right now, if I told you that person's a murderer, you'd be like, oh, I never would have guessed that because the person's really cool, nice person.
He's not the kind of person He's that not would that do kind something of... like that.
But if you've got, do you not follow, like if your friend has a Twitter feed, probably your roommate has a Twitter feed, probably following it. You might have seen the threat that was made. I just don't buy this whole idea that if you truly live with the person, that you saw no sign whatsoever. Now the story gets even crazier. Gets even crazier. This, according to the Seattle Times, they're talking about specifically the reference of the blowing up of a shooting up of a California social media company. They say the reference to the threat is contained in a filing asking that Thompson's housemate, Park Hung Kwan, 66 years old, be held without bail. He was arrested Monday morning during the raid that led to Thompson's capture in a home that Kwan owns. Prosecutors say Kwan has a violent criminal history, including involvement in a murder-for-hire plot using explosives. They call him an extreme danger to the community and a flight risk, alleging that he may have been preparing to mix chemical explosives when he was arrested. Kwan was charged this week with being a felon in possession of firearms after federal agents said they found an arsenal of guns and explosive materials in his room. Now, as a felon, he's not allowed to have access to any of those weapons. So, okay, he's one of the roommates to Paige Thompson. So let us, for a 15th time, play this clip. And again, listen, this is another of the roommates.
She's not somebody that would do something like that maliciously.
Okay, so that's talking about Paige Thompson. But now we've got a third roommate, or a second roommate of Ashley's, who's got an arsenal of weapons in the home? Now, again, producer Rob, you don't necessarily hang out in your roommate's bedroom. You're not hanging out there and going through his closet. Dare I say, if the person was collecting an arsenal of weapons, probably would have seen something. Yes?
I imagine so.
Maybe something, or maybe suspicious. Maybe the room is like, don't you go in my room ever. And locks it. Like, there might be some suspicions here. So that's why I look at this and like, Ashley is either not telling us everything that she's thinking, which I kind of get, right? Because you don't want to be like, be labeled the crazy person who didn't realize this. Or she's legitimately convinced herself that the people that she spends time with aren't capable of what they're being accused of. And I don't know which one I believe. I've had roommates before. Roommates who never, to my knowledge, killed anyone, nor did I have any suspicion of you know, hacking up a company and taking all the details. Like, there's something weird here. We're not being told the whole story, is my sense. My guess is you keep digging. You've got a household filled with now two people accused of some pretty serious stuff. How do you get away with that? How do you get away with it? Now, maybe the only thing that's different here is maybe this is a culture of, maybe they're all kind of the computer programming types. And generally speaking, of course, not everyone, but the programmers sometimes stay to themselves. They're sometimes a little socially awkward. They're not the most outgoing people in the world. Sometimes. Could that be the case here? I just find it hard to believe we didn't suspect anything in something like this. Another roommate is actually calling her out to CBS, because there's like 40,000 people who, it's like a fraternity or sorority.
Put 106 million other people at risk just so you could give it to Capital One?
Basically, right.
Really?
Just like, really? Really? You didn't intend anything? Apparently, there's reason to believe now that Paige Thompson is actually cooperating with prosecutors. This according to the attorney that's suing on behalf of someone whose info was stolen.
For a breach of this type to result in only a one-count indictment indicates to me, at least, and certainly other lawyers who've done this type of criminal work, that this defendant is probably cooperating with the government.
So we'll end up seeing. There's something about this that I just feel like, and this is talk show host Jason, who covers stories like this for a while, that we're missing something. It feels like something's going to happen having to do with someone who's already in custody. I get the feels, producer, the feels. That I think is the scientific way to talk about it, is the feels. You have any plans for the weekend?
No plans.
Sounders on Sunday, though, right?
I'll see you there.
Sporting KC. Are you going to hurt me? Are you going to be one of the Antifa protesters?
No, I'll protect you.
Okay, thank you. You don't get extra pay for that, by the way. And if you get injured, you don't get workers'
I don't
comp.
Get bodyguard
is,
pay?
No.
What?
This is internship duties. Whoa. This is volunteering. Whoa. You're on your own. That's producer Rob filling in for producer Tom all this week. Thank you for the good work that you did. I'm Jason Rance. Have a wonderful weekend. Ben Shapiro Show up next.